Blog Talk Radio.
What books, messages, or inner guidance elevated your life? We'd like you to share with family when we come back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path to making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.uslistenus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will then be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Thurman. who, like me, is a member of Food. Peace, Brother Sermon. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm doing well. I'm in good company with you and the rest of the family.
It's good to have you here. It's a very interesting topic that you came up with for tonight. How did you come to this topic, Brother Sermon?
Well, the topic is what books, messages, and inner guidance elevated your life, and it was some inner guidance that just popped up, and actually today has just been bubbling and more than I could we'll get to it tonight, but it came from within and influenced by what's happening throughout the world that's affecting our life and the entire ecosystem of the planet and the universe in a destructive way, and we've got to take corrective action about it.
Thank you for sharing how you came to that revelation. Brother Sermon, we'll start with you. What books, messages, or inner guidance elevated your life?
And that's more than I could spit out tonight, but I can say that it would be proper to when you're talking about elevating my life, I would say it started with my mother and all of the other mothers that she introduced me to, because she was without a doubt high-level teacher, and others that she introduced me to, mothers and fathers, contributed to that. And she was a psychologist and a whole lot more without having ever gone to psychology school. But she set the course and set the tone for my life, and even when I drifted off her teachings and her continuous teachings that still continue even as an ancestor, has continued to elevate my life and in difficult times. And so I started off saying my mother, and that's for real. And then there was a point when I wasn't motivated and wasn't reading any books, but I reached a point where in my early 20s, or actually in 19 or 20, that my inner self started talking to me about things that I was doing that was destructive, and I never rejected the voices that continued. And at some point, like at 23 in particular, I just came to a conclusion that I'm just going to take action, and I'm just going to do a withdrawal from the life that I was living in the streets. And when I did other things without me reading any books, I was just led to other things that began to awaken me. And so then I just got more motivated to seek more of these elevated thoughts. And out of that, I was led in terms of I was gifted a book when I was, 21, 22 years old, about to prostrate, by a childhood friend. As a little child that I grew up with, and I was actually stunned that he handed me this book. And if I had found it on the street and said, I'll give you $1 if you read it, I don't know if I would have read it. But because I was so honored that he gave it to me, and I felt insulted with myself if I didn't read it, and I saw him again and he asked me about it, that I wouldn't be able to respond to anything I found in the book. So anyway, I read the book, and it really got my attention in a big, big way when they talked about problems of the prostrate, and that motivated me to delve into that subject. And it also dealt with what we must always do is look at a problem, whatever the problems are, and we've got to counter those problems and just take corrective action and seek corrective action if we don't know what it is. And the book spelled out things that you could do in terms of your diet, as well as foods that you could ingest that would help the prostate and keep you from otherwise getting what the book said, that by the time you turn 40, you would be on some medication and eventually you'd have surgery, and they would cut you. And when I read that part that said cut you, my inner self said, no. I screamed out, no, you cut me. And so then I was motivated to go after the foods that they talked about that would benefit the prostate. And then that because now I got my mind open to higher thoughts. Then somewhere in that time frame, Dick Gregory came to the university, and he was in a small room, and the influence led me there, and he just kind of blowed my mind with, and that led me to his book, Cooking with Mother Nature for Folks Who Eat, and he said that the sun cooks an apple and cooks an orange, and you don't need a stove when it's ripe. When it's ripe, you pick it and eat it and be nourished.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me to, he inspired me to, just like the junkies use this term called cold turkey, meaning stop what you was doing that was destructive. And so I did this cold turkey thing that, I decided for 2 whole weeks I would drink nothing but water, eat nothing but fruit, and I did it and had excellent results. And so then my mm-hmm. mind said, well, what else is there? And that led me to other things, including being led to the teachings of an ancestor, John Henry Clark, and ancestor, Dr. Venn, ancestor, Amos Wilson, and Amos, and ancestor, Sister Frances Wilson, and a whole lot more, Richard King, and more that opened me up more and more to the elevated perspective of not just our health, but our spirituality and our culture and our history and realistic history instead of the miseducated, misguided concepts that's still in the schools. And led me also to Carter G. Woodson and the miseducation of the Negro, and that's a concept that to this day many of us don't recognize the damage of miseducation. And Carter G. Woodson was way, way ahead on that subject, and he was a educator that travel around the world, and not just in the elementary level, but university levels all around the world, which he taught. And he wrote about it, I believe, in 1933. And as powerful and necessary as the message is, there's still a lot of people that have never heard of the book or read it, including school teachers. And then there's other books and other things, but I'll just stop right there.
Okay. We thank you for sharing that. That's quite an interesting journey. That it seems that most of us, or most of the people that I know, started thinking different thoughts. I guess once they left school, because school is an indoctrination camp for.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's set up. So once you leave school, and if your mind is not totally burnt out at that point, and you start thinking your own thoughts and recognizing that you want to know more about just different things. So at that point, many of us, and I guess if you keep going to more and more school, it takes longer for you to get to the point where you realize that the answers are inside and not in these books that you're directed to. That's what I come, because we are experiencing what was here when we came here. So things have been like this forever. But children didn't go to school the way we know school now. I think like it's been only 100 years or a little more that they had the formal education and mandatory schooling for children. And again, that had to do with the Industrial Revolution. They needed workers. They wanted to train people to work for 8 hours without question and just do as they're told. So the 12 years in school was to indoctrinate them to just come, be present, and do what you're told to do, and then go home and don't think anything else. So that's what, and we think that's normal Well, that's the way life is supposed to be, because that's all we know. And now that schooling education system is seemingly destroying itself, I think it's a good time for us to decide what other kind of education we want an education system, what it would look like, what it would be. So, and the books that you mentioned would be a good part of a curriculum, I think, for training our children, for encouraging our children to think, to be healthy, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know. Because our system now is a system of, you know, only one thing. So you focus on, let's say, science, and you have no interaction with spirituality or religion, because we've been taught that those are two separate things. But when you're doing it right, it's the same thing. Your spirituality will give you the science to take care of your body. So I think the education system really will change now, and this is a good. I think this is a good time to be present on the realm, because we get to help make the changes. You know, all the things that we came through that we didn't like, or the things that we see going on now that we don't like the direction that they're going. We have an opportunity to give input and to create a new way of being. So what I'm going to share a quote. It, I guess you would say that this is a inner guidance. It's a quote that I have, and I will say the quote and then say how I came to that. The quote is, "The healing power of a person lies within the person, not within the doctor, a pill, or a knife. The healing power of a community lies within the community, not within a ballot box, an executive order, or a referendum." And that's the end of the quote. So, the way I came to that is because as I did more and more studying on how the human body works, it became clear that the healing is within us. You know, each individual man or woman has within him or herself the ability to heal whatever needs healing within the body. So then being that the microcosm and the macrocosm are the same, just different sizes, then it seemed to me that if there are any problems within our community, then we as the members of the community or the cells of the community body have within ourselves the whatever is necessary to heal our community. So that's how that came up.
But that's beautiful. And that was an inner revelation?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love it.
Yeah. It came as, like I said, I'm studying how the body works, you know.
And
I think Ulu is an example of what I thought at that time, because Ulu is not asking for laws to be changed or, you know, for somebody to come and do something for us is the individual cells of the Ulu body that are working for the healing of the community.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, that was a powerful revelation that you had, and it's just a testimony that we have, and that's why I specifically put in there inner guidance, so you could reword it another way, but revelations, we have the ability to have it come to us every day and certainly every morning and every night, because we're in a different energetic mode of our mind. And some people talk about the different levels of your mind, and including in the morning you're on a different level than you are after you get up and get active, and before bed you also go back to a deeper level of your mind. And I know what the names of it is, I just don't cross my mind right now, but anyway, the alpha level of your mind. But it used to be common amongst us that we got revelations, and that's why our ancient ancestors that accomplished more than anyone has ever accomplished since on this planet, because they were getting revelations all the time, but they were operating in that mode all of the time and not distracted with all of this stuff that we are distracted with now. And we've got the opportunity to go, and you made me, it's just so many things, but there's a brother that some years ago that I can't tell you what his name is, and I have to search to find him again, but he went on to talk about that level of the mind that was so deep that we were just constantly being guided to whatever we had a need for. It would be created and a picture would be painted in our mind, and then we know from there how to make it happen and build it, include it. Imhotep was one of them. And he went on to say that he had tapped into that ancient knowledge within. And he said, he suggested that if you go on the journey that he had in his book, he said, after you relearn what our ancestors knew, you wouldn't need to read any more books. But that's some high level stuff. It needs to be revealed to the people that we have the capability of transforming so many things, like you said, including illnesses, and by that inner conversation that we have with ourselves, because all of our cells and our muscles interact and get busy towards healing or correcting the issue, like you were talking about it. And in medical, sincere, genuine medical circles, one of the terms is called epigenetics. Don't go any further, because I think there's somebody that wants to get in on the conversation.
Yes, I'm going to open the line for them. Caller with the last four digits, 0673, please state your name, where you're calling from, and add your thought to the pot.
I'm Brother Al Kebulon. I'm from Gabriel Prosser City. Some call it Richmond, Virginia, but we call it Gabriel, quote-unquote, Prosser City. I make two contributions. I thought I heard a sister say that the contribution she made came from her own, having her own mind. So I'm going to say a contribution that came from my own, having my own mind, and then I'll say a contribution that came from our ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark. One that came from my own heaven or mind is, you cannot always change what goes on outside your mind, but you can change your mind. And in doing so, the outside picture changes. What shows up on life screen depends on the film you put in your mental camera. If you put a lot of core negativity in your mental camera, that's what's going to show up on life screen. If you put a lot of, I can't do this, I can't accomplish this, I can't lose the weight, I can't come off those pills, I can't whatever, right, then that's what's going to show up on life screen. But if you change the film in your mental camera, then what you see on the screen is going to change. So that's my contribution. And you can say, you can quote that it came from Brother Al Kebulon. Now, I'm also going to talk about a contribution that came from our ancestor, John Henry Clark. And I don't know if he put it in the book, but he said it verbally. And I'm a paraphrase.
Okay.
He said, when a father is missing in the home, whether that father is a parent to a child or a husband to a wife, when that father is missing in the home, and you go to church on a Sunday, and you seek a spiritual father, and that spiritual father does not resemble the one missing in your home, any psychiatrist of notable worth would see that you are psychologically deranged if he's a good psychologist. So I took from what he said, and I took from what he said, I won't say extrapolate because I took pretty much literally what he said, and I coined the phrase. You hear a lot of time in church, someone says, I don't need no man. I just need Jesus.
Mm.
Now, when you made that statement, what you were saying is that I got a spiritual father to place that biological man that's missing in my life. Now, when you said that, what was the image in your mind when you said that?
The white man.
So then a psychiatrist, so Dr. John Henry Clark, any psychiatrist of noble worth will determine you psychologically deranged for you to separate a spiritual father that don't coincide with the biological father in your home. And
sure.
I got some else I would add, but that's an upcoming book it's an upcoming book, so I'm not going to name the title of the book, but it's coming up. Art is not art for art's sake. Art is supposed to be socially relevant, and to us, it's supposed to be socially relevant to the African experience. Art means dance, music, drama, literature, all. So I'm doing a book, an upcoming book. It has to do with comedy. And I remember Sister Soldier said, listen to George Carlin one day. She said, I could do that. And if she was going to do it, she was going to do comedy because what comedians have a tendency to do is get reality. We laugh because that is true. So I said, I'm going to be real quick with this, right? I've never been married. And people come with all type of reasons. So I said, I blame it on society. And there you go again, cast the blame on society. If you listen to what I'm saying now, girls were socialized for married life. You had the Ken and Barbie dolls, even though they're white, you had the Ken and Barbie dolls. You had Susan Homemaker sets where you bake cakes, pies, and cookies. You had doll babies, they cried and wept, and girls got the opportunity to change their diapers. You were socialized for marriage. Boys were socialized to be soldiers. And tell me if I'm wrong. You got G.I. Joe, grenades. You got bow and arrow sets, guns and rifles. We were socialized to be soldiers. So when a boy and a girl reach the age of majority, and a woman says, start talking about marriage, why would you be confused if your brother don't know what you're talking about? Not only was he not socialized a healthy marriage, boys wasn't socialized for marriage, period. We were socialized to be soldiers. There's nothing in our toys that we had that prepared for us to have a healthy relationship with a woman. I'm going to let that go because someone said, not that the speech need be long, but it take a long while to make it short. I don't know how to make it short, so I'm gonna let that go. But thanks for listening to me.
Thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate that. Yeah.
And thanks for your contribution as well, sister.
Thank you.
And thank you, brother. That is powerful, and we need to sit in your circle more often, and we need to circle up and go deep. And Sister Q, you know, what you contributed is in that African deep thought, and what Brother Kevilon to the family is deep, and we need that, and we need that deep insight of how we can do. And he talked about that film, what you got on your film or in your camera. And as he was talking, I was reminded of another one of our ancestors, Ivan Van Sertemer. And Van Sertemer, years ago, and I try to make this short, but he was some years ago, and he was in some city, perhaps doing speaking engagements, and a very scholarly brother, and traveled around the world studying and teaching. And whatever city he was in, he asked the person he was talking to, he said, "Where's the high school?" And they mentioned something to him, and he asked the person, he said, "Is it the inner city school? Or where was the inner city schools?" And the person told Van Sertima, he said, "Well, you don't want to go there." And Van Sertima said, "Yes, I do." And so the person took him, and he got to the school, and he went in the auditorium, and the auditorium had a lot of young folks in there, teenagers, and they were being verbal and moving about, and there was a lot of noise in the auditorium. Van Sertima came to the stage and came to the podium and the microphone, and many people would have said, "Can I have your attention? Would you all settle down, be quiet?" Van Sertima didn't do any such thing, because he had in his mind, had painted a picture in his mind of how he was going to, with his experience of transforming that situation, that energy. And Van Sertima started speaking as if everyone was totally quiet, and he was giving out such deep ancient African knowledge and world history that over time, students would turn their head because they heard stuff that they had, knowledge that they had never heard. And over time, without him ever saying or anyone saying, "Be quiet, listen," after a few minutes, the entire auditorium was quiet. And the only voice you heard was Van Sertima. And until he stopped talking, that's the way it remained. Because he had a picture in his mind of how he wanted things to be, but he also knew about being able to transform energies. And he did it without having to say, "Be quiet, shut up," or raise his voice.
Right. Yeah, that's
And so all of that, go right ahead, sister.
No, I was just affirming what you were saying about Ivan Van Sertima.
Yeah. And a few minutes ago, I mentioned Carter G. Woodson and the miseducation of the Negro, and how they, and he mentioned somewhere in his book, I searched for it today, I just couldn't find that particular part of it, it's in there, but he mentioned how the public school system breaks the self-esteem of the of our children. And when you break the self-esteem, at a point when they drift out into the street and other disruptive lifestyles, when they have been damaged and had their self-esteem broken, then many of them, not all of them, tend to get into disruptive behaviors and stuff like that. And so I said earlier that we've got to counter, you know, whatever it is. And Brother Anthony Browder, you know, which is another one of our master teachers that's on the scene, still on the scene, he said we should not rely on the school system to be responsible for teaching our children there or our history. And every black home should be a classroom, and every black home should have black books. Black families should sit down with their families and read the information, not just during February Black History Month. And it was Dr. Carter G. Woodson's intent was that we would study our history all throughout the year and showcase what we had learned during the month of February, but not just to have some limited conversations and talks and presentations during the month of February. And so the subject tonight, you know, about the books, the messages, and the inner guidance and that elevated your life is extremely valuable, and we need to do more of it. And there's one of our teachers that's with us, you know, might be 90 years old now. Elder Brother Neely Fuller wrote the book that's, for short, it's called the Code System Book. And the longer title, and there's so many books and so much knowledge and so much messages, and that's why we've got to have more of these conversations that bringing forth what you, Sister Q, brought forth and what Brother Kevilon brought forth. And the title of the book is called The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. a textbook slash workbook for thought, speech, and or actions for victims of racism. And in as using the term that's widely known, the code system, as the title of the book, it brings forth things that's vital to get free our mind. And he has in the book nine areas of people activity that includes economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war. And it's powerful, and it gets into things like things that we must stop doing. And one of them is to stop fighting. We got to stop name calling, stop cursing, stop disrespecting each other. And we just totally got to put a stop to it, because we cannot liberate the spirit and mind and therefore the body of our people when we are operating on that lower frequency, and we've got to elevate to the higher frequencies. And all of these things that he talks about, and he's got just interesting perspectives or language about things. And it's just like economics. He said economics does not mean simply acquiring, saving, or spending money. Economics is not a tool. Is not a tool of money. Money is a tool of economics, and economics is a result of a person or persons speaking and acting effectively in the production of justice, correctness, and correctness. It is not simply how money is handled that determines economics. It's a matter of how everything is handled. So what he's saying, and to what ends, and so the economics should determine, as he said in so many words, is how everything is handled. And when we take economics and handle it properly, it's just like Us Lifting Us with the cooperative model that Us Lifting Us is strongly involved in, then it affects how everything is handled. So it affects how our businesses are handled, that we would employ our people at a fair wage and everything that's connected to that, and that we would have that our farmers would have access to the businesses that we are building that would include farmers' marketplace, a marketplace for the farmers, that they would have a place to bring their produce, and we would support buying it for our nourishment, but in the process, we're supporting the economic survivability of the farmers, and they just wouldn't be having any problem of being able to market their produce, their nourishing foods that we all need. And it's all solvable when we get the right concept of what we do with our thinking. And he talks about the nine areas of people activity. And I'm sure that in the breakdown, it would mention education, and education would include science, and getting back to books and things that we need clarity on. There's the science of melanin, and the posting about today's conversation had the image, the image of the cover of the book, Melanin, the Chemical Key to Black Greatness, by Brother Dr. Carol Barnes, who's a melanin scientist and researcher. And it talks about the harmful effects of toxic drugs on melanin centers within the black human. And it, along with others that teach about melanin, including ancestor Richard King and Rick Kittles, that's still on the team and doing some powerful work. Melanin is an attractor and an absorber of energies, and when the book cover of Melanin, The Chemical Key to Black Greatness, talks about the harmful effect, melanin being an absorber, it absorbs naturally, and it just sucks up sunshine when we allow it to shine on our body, our total body, as it's supposed to be. But when we let it be subjected to poisonous, toxic chemicals in any form, including, drugs, but also gasoline, turpentine, and whatever. And when I mentioned gasoline and turpentine, it's been common all my life that when brothers and some sisters included paint a house, interior, exterior, that instead of covering up and putting on gloves like I have done. They are barehanded, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day or whenever they stop to take a break is for years, and as a child, what they would do to get the paint off of their skin was use some turpentine or sometimes gasoline. But mm-hmm. what happens when you put any chemical, any substance on your body, water included and herbs included, the body sucks it up. It snorts it up. It sucks it up, and it snorts up turpentine and gasoline, and it's harmful to our melanin. And I'll just stop right there because we might have anybody that's got any contributions to this conversation tonight, because we really want to get the sisters and brothers like you, Sister Q, that made a powerful contribution, and Brother Kevin that made a powerful contribution, that we got to get in that circle and talk to each other's mind and take it higher. And yes.
We don't have anybody with a hand raised right now, but speaking of Dr. Carol Barnes, Jazzy Melanin, it was written as a novel following, I would say, kind of like a personalized novel, the story of mm-hmm. what a melanin researcher was doing in an effort to strengthen his melanin. And he talked mm-hmm. about how important certain kinds of music were to strengthening the melanin or increasing melanin production in your food and different things like that. And when I thought about the music and then Brother Al-Kabilam was talking about the art and the music, how our music has been co-opted so that now it's not vibing for us as a way to strengthen our melanin anymore. And it has been made into, the music has become a destructive element in our community rather than a positive influence to us as a people. We have someone else who wants to have something to say. Caller with the last four digits, 3282, please state your name, where you're calling from, your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Thank you all so very much. My name is Monica Esparza. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia. I'm thankful for this conversation and the invitation to contribute. Sister, I hear you loud and clear in terms of education, and I always think about Dr. Marcus Garvey. So I don't know if he was a doctor or not, but Marcus Garvey, who always said that education is not something that we take in, but it's something that we give out. And
yes.
Also I think about, yes, and also I think about Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. John Jackson, who had inquiry, which is, you know, the root of education, the internal interest in the internal questions about why does this world seem different? I know there is a greater truth, and so I need to find it. And, you know, that quest for knowledge, I think, that curiosity is something that I think we should encourage our children to have more of and not rely on. And I am a former, spent some time in the school systems as an educator, and I noticed that is severely lacking in our children today. You know, oftentimes curiosity is discouraged, and we know in many religious settings that curiosity is discouraged, and that also clouds our truth. And so I'd like to thank my family for always encouraging curiosity. And speaking of books, I would like to raise two books this evening. One that landed on me, and these books always land on me, you know, by accident. One book was given to me by a visitor who came to a business that my king and I had many years ago, a record shop, when he came in to sell the books. And she plopped this one on me, and of course, you know, I was an avid reader at that particular time. The book is Return of the Ancient Ones by Empress Berdisi. And it was actually she who was going around and, you know, sharing these books, encouraging people to have them in her, to have them in their businesses to sell. I didn't know who she was at the time. Actually, I didn't understand the relevance of that book till many years later. But I'm so thankful to have it in my collection and to have come around to understand the legacy of the Wichita and the legacy of the Mound people, which I have grown to understand to a much greater degree. And I'm so thankful for the indigenous records that are there, the pyramids and the stones that are right here in the United States and around the world, as Brother Thurman, I think, spoke to earlier, per the scholarly research of Dr. Van Sertima. But I also want to lift up books that have recently encouraged me in that same light, actually. And also, I also need to recognize my father, who always said, as I traveled across the world, the traveled to Africa, you know, to Kemet, to find my truth there. But my father would always say, you know, America is home. And I took a long time to understand what he meant, but I certainly do today. And so the second book that I'd like to share that influenced me was the book by the name of a man named Horace Butler. And the book is When Rocks Cry Out. And this is another book that I did not seek. It found me, actually. I was in a bookstore, you know, had not intended to be in the bookstore that day, but, you know, I am, you know, I go where spirit leads me, and I am a reader. So I just, you know, happened to bounce in the store and bounce around the shelves. And this book came to me, When Rocks Cry Out. It is, to me, it was another pivoting moment for me, because it was another revelation about the truth insights that we melanated people have been all over the world. We have built all over the world. We are magnetically connected to this plane and our magic in these places that are hidden and disguised in all kind of stories, but right here in front of us, if we would only become more in tune. And so with that, I'll say thank you for the opportunity for me to share this evening, and everyone be blessed.
Thank you so much, Sister Mark, sharing your information and adding your faith, your flavor to the pot. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Sister, and we would definitely call on you, Brother Kevin included, Sister Q included, to come back specifically to carry us deeper into the information that everyone has shared, because we need to go deeper. And, you know, the last Sister Monica, we need your guidance in helping the family to understand the mounds that you spoke about, this all over the planet, and also the deeper and greater clarity on rocks, and so just know that we would look forward to everyone that has contributed to come back and to go deeper into everything that you've brought forward to the conversation and to the circle tonight.
Very, very good. Sister Monica gave me a thought came as I was listening to her. She said that we don't encourage curiosity in children. And I think part of that is that we have been, I'll say taught. We've been taught that we have to know all the answers. So that if a child asks a question, we have to know the answer to the question. And we know we don't know the answer to all the questions. So rather than say to the child, I don't know, let's see if we can find out, and help the child to find out, because it was their question, not yours. So guide them to get the answer to their own question and teach them how to get answers when a question comes to them. Instead of us doing that, we tell them, don't ask me no questions. No, sit down and be quiet, whatever. And we do disrupt their sense of curiosity. And then what happens is they stop wanting to know. And we wind up like where we are today with people that know a lot of stuff that's not so, because they didn't do whatever was required to find out what is so. They just accept what was given to them. So I wanted to thank her for bringing that to mind.
Good, good. Yeah, and towards what you were talking about in a child, we've got to put a stop to having the inner guidance that's in all of us, including the children. We got to put a stop to squashing the inner guidance mm-hmm. that they came into the world with, because there's been lots of African children, if not most all of them, are born geniuses. But yet, if mm-hmm. you ask most people, how many black geniuses do you know of, they pause. Whereas it's common for sisters to give birth to geniuses. It's common. We just don't know it because this system and its program and its miseducation, its duping and tricking and deceiving has messed us up. And we've got to correct it. And we part of it is much to correcting it, and it's on us to do it. And we've got to have the courage to bring forth this higher conversations, you know, such as being as the sisters and the brothers have brought forth tonight, and get greater clarity. And a powerful book that to have in our libraries, and there's many powerful books, but this is a unique in its own. It's called A Calendar of Revolutionary Daily Thoughts by Mwalimu Bomani Baruti, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. If you're not familiar with him, he's a prolific writer and teacher, prolific writers, published many books. And in his book, which is Daily Thoughts, this by Africans from all over the world, including ancestors, and it gets deeper, but it helps to challenge your mind and you look forward to it. And just for example, it's common to hear our people mention the word elder, but it's not common that we've got clarity that from our high culture societies, an elder is an older person in the community who has accumulated a vast working knowledge of his or her people's traditions and because of a lifetime of demonstrated commitment to these principles and practices, is sought out for the wisdom that maintains the integrity of the family, community, and nations. Elders are beyond reproach and held in high self-esteem. Among African people, being an elder is indeed an honor. And where I'm reading from right now, there's a little bit more to that, and part of the more is to be an older person does not necessarily qualify you with what I just read to be called an elder. And if you have not qualified as what I just read, the qualifications of being an elder, in the high culture African tradition, you are considered an older.
Hmm.
So it's two different subjects. Either an elevated elder, or otherwise you could be, mm-hmm. from the proper definition, in higher culture, a older.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is just among the things that we would be delving into when we delve into this subject of books and messages and inner guidance that helps to elevate your life.
For sure. So, Brother Thurman, we've got about 5 minutes left. How do you see this as a regular program in the Ulu world? How do you see this in the as a regular part of the Ulu world?
Well, it's necessary because we need higher elevated thoughts in our life that changes our world in a very beneficial way. And if you have elevated thoughts and practices and disciplines with regard to health, then you have elevated health. And if you don't have that, then you have what's the health status of the masses, which is dis-ease. And so the masses help support, just for example, kidney dialysis centers. But if tomorrow morning we awaken with elevated thoughts about nature and nutrition and wellness and following, you know, some of what you talked about, Sister Q, of being able to transform our mind that could transform our health status, the kidney dialysis centers would start closing and other things, and cancer centers would close. If cancer centers are increasing and chemotherapy is increasing and dialysis is increasing, it's because the people don't have elevated thoughts about wellness. They've got artificial, pharmaceutical, surgical thoughts, and they think that's normal, and it ain't normal. It ain't natural. And it's all solvable. And so we got to have small conversations about whatever the problem is and spend major time of coming up with solutions into all of our issues. And it's vital to Ulu because Ulu is their model, is cooperative economics, is very absolutely necessary, but it's also necessary that we are well so that we can be around for a long, long time. It's also necessary that we have good function of our spirit, mind, and body when we are well, so then we can make greater contributions to taking control of the economics of our community. But when we're diseased and the third eye is clouded or closed up because of malnourishment, and this gets into melanin, it gets into the gland that's in the middle of our head that's related to melanin, called the pineal, or P-I-N-E-A-L, it's all related to Ulu. When we're confused, it's not clicking, you know, the necessity to break free of the capitalism and the cruelty and brutality that Wall Street was founded on, the brutality, the raping, the killing, and the enslaving and shackling the minds and the bodies of our people on Wall Street. And so there's cities, Richmond, Virginia is one of them, and the downtown area has still a cobblestone area where they in Virginia, you know, the ship that kidnapped our people brought them up to what's called the James River into Richmond, and they were marched across a bridge. And but in this cobblestone area that I'm talking about, they had auctions to auction off our people. But it's up to us to know about what was done, but it's vital that we get busy and we have clarity of taking corrective action. And so, as I mentioned, the health thing, if we take corrective action, we wouldn't be having this epidemic of high blood pressure, kidney dialysis, and on and on, and so-called cancers. We would get a clarity and take action and put a stop to it, and we would be in control of our health and not bound to the others. And I don't know. I saw it earlier today, and I actually had it on my mind, but I don't know if I can find it right now. But Baba Hakima with Us Lifting Us, I think I can get it. But he spoke about – Baba Hakima is one of the elder founders of Us Lifting Us, and a very, very wise brother, along with all of the other brothers and sisters that were the initial group bringing forth and studying and researching Us Lifting Us. And his message is, which is a powerful message like the messages tonight, it says the greatest waste of time is to be busy doing the wrong thing. In the context of African liberation, if our will, activity, and resources are not directed at building and maintaining systems and institutions that seek to position us as sovereign, then by default, we serve another and not ourselves. This would surely be a tragic waste of time and other resources. And so in a lot of categories, we are just being involved in a tragic waste of time and other resources. You know, otherwise, we could be freed up. We could be freed up economically by taking control of the economics with a sane economic model, our ancient economic model of cooperative economics. But we, in the process of doing that and being successful at that, we still need to be well. So it's got to be a total package. So Neely Fuller talked about the nine areas of people activity, and Sister Ancestor Frances Welsing added another vital piece, and that is health. 10 areas. And we got to do that, or else it would just, as Baba Hakima said, it would be a tragic waste of time and other resources. And Sister, I think I didn't completely answer your question about this subject of the books and the messages from whoever and the inner guidance that would elevate our life. We need to do it more often. And that's why in the Ulu model, one of their flagship models that's been on the drawing board for years, is just a matter of accumulating the, for one, the monetary resources to put it into place, and that is a Ulu marketplace that would have multiple things in it, including an area for black farmers to bring in their produce, and so there would be foods and bulk buying of foods like you do in the health food store, and there would be bookstores, of course, and there would be meeting places and theaters and auditoriums where we could not only show films that we produce as vital to our awakening, but also we could have these conversations and spend more time in delving into it. And we must get clarity. And Martin Luther King said, we got to get the language right. When I read you the words of Baba Hakima, it's about getting the language right, not a tragic waste of time. We got to get the language right. And whatever it is, if the language is destructive to us, we got to discard it and get the language right to whatever is in our greatest good. And greatest good is a term that our ancient ancestors applied to most everything that they were involved in. And if whatever we're going to do tomorrow, if it's to drink some liquor, we need to ask ourselves, is that the greatest good? And if it ain't, don't do it, period.
Hmm.
And if we are, so the greater good, the principles of Mayotte, if Mayotte's principle said, I have not stolen from my brother or whatever, if that's not in the greater, if it's not in the greater good to steal from one another, to cuss one another, like, which is also a part of the principles of Mayotte, no cursing and name calling. And Neely Fuller's code system book says the same thing. We got to stop the name calling, stop the insults. Stop the public insults. Stop representing ourselves poorly in public in the code system book. We got the opportunity to do it. And, yes, we need to continue this conversation. And I'm all for it that next month we continue on and we invite you, Sister Q, and the sisters and the brothers that have contributed to this conversation tonight, even silently, to come back and we go deeper into your contributions and expand that and help us to get the language right and get everything in order and to get free and maintain our freedom forever and ever.
Thank you for sharing all of that, Brother Thurman. And we do look forward to making this conversation a regular part of the Dare to Win programming and bring it into the physical when we get the Ulu Mark as part of the cultural centers and bookstores. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. And as Brother Thurman said, that includes those who spoke, as well as those who just lent their energy without speaking. So invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 p.m. for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.